So verse 18, for the message about the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, those who are not finding life, those who are not interested in the truth, whatever word you want to use there. But to us who are being saved, it is the power of God. The message of the cross is the power of God. And the message of the cross, obviously, is the message of love. And only love can portray it, not eloquence. There's nothing wrong with being eloquent. But if they think eloquence is what it's all about, they're missing the whole point. The only way we can ever help each other come to Jesus is by our love for each other. Because that's what he did it with. Drew us to God through love. For it is written, quoting Isaiah 29, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, and the discernment of the discerning I will thwart. Isaiah is writing at a time when the king of the south of Judah, because he was a politician in a way, in the Jerusalem court, and the king was siding with this group, Assyria, or siding with the north, or siding with other groups, all the political stuff which we're terribly used to, different people taking up different sides, and all their political and diplomatic wisdom was just bringing the country to ruin. And Isaiah keeps saying, what you need in the country is justice. What you need is the poor to be cared for. You need to live the life of Judaism to the full. That's our greatest protection against collapse in our society, where the king and the nobles hobnobbing with the other people is just bringing the whole country to ruin. Where is the one, says Paul, who is wise? Where is the scribe, the writer? Where is the debater? So the public speaker is distinct from the scribe, who's the writer. Where are they? Hasn't God made foolishness the wisdom of the world? And by world, Paul means, which often in the New Testament means, John uses it the same, he's not taking anything against the world, but by the world he means the world that is blocked off from the influence of the Spirit of God. The world that is self-contained and running along its own life without listening, without adoration, without wonder, without prayer, without allowing the mystery to enter in. For since in the wisdom of the world, in the wisdom of God, the world did not know God through wisdom. Wisdom has to be used all the time with inverted commas. It's got a beautiful meaning and another meaning. So-called wisdom, you could always put there. Our human intellect can't get to know God. Know in Hebrew means love. Knowledge, the only knowledge that is the knowledge through association, through communion, through intimacy, through experience. It's not knowledge about God, it's knowing God. And since God is love, very clearly for Paul, love is the only way that we can come to know God. Human wisdom, intellect, logic, philosophy, argument, we can learn a lot from it, but we can't know God through it. Since that can't happen, God decided through the folly or the foolishness of our proclamation to save those who believe. The community knew Paul, he lived with them for the year and a half, speaking to them simply, obviously a very loving man, loving them beautifully, drawing them to Jesus on the cross beautifully. They've got all those memories. He's appealing to their memory. And that's why they came into the Christian community, not because he was cleverer than anybody else or was a wonderful orator that attracted them for the moment till a better orator came along somewhere else. So Paul is not denying the real gains of Greek thought. And any of you who have studied Greek thought, a lot of our culture is grateful for it. And Paul is not against it at all. He's not against real wisdom. But at the centre of Greek thought, all the Greek philosophers of the day, the self was very central. Self was at the heart of it. And even the Stoics thought of the divine as the soul of the world. Kind of pantheistic a bit, and the soul, to be in touch with the divine is to be in touch with your deepest self. By the way, we're going through that again in our modern world. I mean, I think a lot of the self-adulation that goes on, maybe a lot of the New Age, not all of it, but a lot of the New Age stuff is all about the self. Well, the self that Jesus talked about is only found, as he says, through giving it away in love, not through focusing on the self and grasping and centralizing things on our independent ego. It's about God and love and receiving and humility and self-giving. And Paul's eloquence, if you want to have a look at Paul's eloquence, it's worth, though it's indirect because Luke is writing it, Paul's speech in Athens in the Acts is a beautiful, eloquent, powerful homily in a Greek setting, and it's quite brilliant, remembering of course that Luke wrote it, but Luke wrote it having investigated too, so I can't see any reason for not thinking Paul was quite eloquent, and a lot of his writing is quite brilliant, but he's not relying on it for success. It's not an instrument for him. It happens because he is brilliant. He's a brilliant intellect and he's full of love, and he's able to connect Judaism and the Gentile world in just an astonishing way. So he's a wonderful gift to the Christian church, clearly, and a brilliant theologian, though he's been abused ever since by people who are a lot lesser than him, who misinterpret him and use him, etc. But so Paul had all these wonderful gifts, and of course God used them. But Paul's attention never strayed from the crucified Jesus. Only love can portray the saving power of the crucified Jesus, and only love can move people to believe. So love is what Paul concentrates on. And in a few weeks' time, we're going to be looking at this lovely statement on love in chapter 13. So we'll see plenty of that. And born out of his experience, Paul says, the Jews demand signs. All the way through the gospel, they're saying to Jesus, give us a sign. They're wanting miracles, something extraordinary that'll say, ah, God is present. God caused this to happen. This thing, you can't explain it, and it happens, so therefore it's God. It can be right, but it's very tricky stuff, as I know you know, because a whole lot of things, we don't understand nature, we don't understand the powers of the human spirit. Charlatans can do things quite as clear. There's all kinds of, miracles are really dicey things, really, to be dealing with. Not denying them, but interpreting them is quite problematic. And many people get swept off their feet by extraordinary happenings, and when they're swept off their feet, they often go into a very unreal place. Whereas no one is ever distracted by love. Love doesn't distract, genuine, self-giving love. So the Jews are demanding signs, the Greek desires wisdom, and I've done my best in a brief way to describe, means eloquent rhetoric. But we proclaim Christ crucified. It's a stumbling block to Jews that God would reveal God's love in a man banished by the synagogue, the high priest, crucified outside the city, naked on a cross, is just absurd. No Jew could ever think of it. And to the Gentiles, it's stupid, to be quite honest. And it is both of those things, if you don't know what it's about. But to those who are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ, the power of God and the wisdom of God. God's power is seen in the powerlessness of Jesus, loving through the powerlessness. Because we're often powerless. We're powerless to protect our children. We're powerless to find love. We're powerless. We're not very powerful people at all. The only power we've got is the power of love, and the more we stick to it, the better. And that is a divine gift given through us to each other. So the power of God is shown in the love of Jesus from the cross, and it's the wisdom of God to show us in the darkest place it's possible for human Jesus, therefore it's possible for you and me, it's possible to love even in the darkest place. It's possible to love while dying. It's possible to love while being abused. It's possible to love. It is possible because God can do it. None of those things are good and we don't want them, but none of them can stop you loving. That surely is the key Christian message. Nothing can stop you loving. And if we believed it, we'd find ourselves being able to love through it. We need help, of course, all the time, and that's what God is gracing us to give us. So this Jesus Christ crucified is what God's power is. But I don't have to get you to do it, but if you did, sometimes I'm sure you do think about it, but when people think of the power of God, it's almost automatic, I find, that people think of God doing big, powerful things in the world, like really big, extraordinary, wonderful things. Whereas the power of God is the power of love. That's the only power God has. Hence, Jesus weeps over the city of Jerusalem. Hence, he dies on a cross. Hence, the world is often in a mess because God isn't controlling it. And yet people kind of want God to control it. The foolishness of God is wiser than human wisdom, says Paul, and God's weakness is stronger than human strength. Because it attracts the heart, it liberates the heart, and saints grow in the garden of the Christian community, and nothing else can do that. We listen to Jesus' words. I think they're relevant to this. Luke 17:33, if you try to make your life secure, said Jesus, you'll lose it. And don't we all know that? It's only by giving your life away in love that you'll preserve it. Now, I've paraphrased Jesus' words, but I've stayed with the exact meaning of them to the best of my ability. That's what he's saying. If you only by giving your life away, wasting it the way a mother wastes her life. With my mother had 8 kids. She was a very intelligent woman. Her father was a very high position. I'm sure mum could have had a wonderful career. Is there a better career than care? I don't know. You can have both. I'm not saying one or other, but when I look back at my mother, and when everyone else in the district looked at my mother, I don't think they felt she was a failure, because she didn't. They saw what she did. I mean, look at me. And I'm the worst of them. No, so, you know, so she just, that's, motherhood is, there isn't a better thing to be. So the self-sacrificing love is what we're all called. 2 Corinthians 12:9, Paul says in his second letter to them, but I'll bring it in here, he was troubled and he said he prayed to be rid of this problem that was getting at him. I think it was probably the failure of Judaism to welcome Christianity. That would have did break Paul's heart. But so many of his brothers and sisters in Jews turned their back on the cross. Jesus said to him, look, my grace is sufficient for you. Power is made perfect in weakness. How many of us believe that? How many males believe it? How many male celibate priests believe it? I mean, you're getting pretty tight now when you get to that. Because if you want a male, go for a celibate, because he hasn't got a woman to scratch his eyes at, and he's got no teenage kids to tell him to smarten up. So, you know, you're into a real male redoubt when you get into the clerical world, because we are trained to be independent, self-reliant. You get all, not really, it's about prayer and love. But on a human level, I'm sure you can see the dangers of a male being without the ordinary. Okay, now there's good in it, there's beauty in it, there's sanctity in it, but there's also troubles in it. Well, do I believe as a priest, does the Pope believe as the Pope, does a cardinal believe as a cardinal, that actually power is made perfect in weakness? That it's our common humanity that unites us? That it's okay to be weak as long as we love when we're weak? So, says Paul, I'll boast all the more gladly of my weaknesses so that the power of Christ may dwell in me. And they'll see that, oh God, it's not power. Paul isn't the great powerful one, so it must be coming from somewhere. It must be God. And it'll take people to God, not to Paul. That's what he wants. Verse 26. Consider your own call. He reminds them of their own. Consider your own call, brothers and sisters. Not many of you were wise by human standards. Not many were powerful. Not many were of noble birth. We don't know how many, but the odds are, with 2/3 of the people slaves, that, and a lot of them coming into the bulk of the community were just workers, slaves, domestic slaves. You don't imagine them in the salt mines or anything. Slavery in the world is very difficult when you talk about slavery in this world, because Jewish slaves, and they had them, Greek slaves, Roman slaves, you've got to be very precise. Even city varied from city how they treated them. Slaves were not an ethnic group. Slaves were often highly educated. Slaves were often the educators in the Roman world. Slaves could own property. They had no right over their own children. They belonged to the household and they couldn't go and come as they pleased. Most slaves would presume they'd be freed by the time they were 30. They were captured in war at the age of 19 or 20 somewhere over in the East or something and brought back as slaves. But by the time they were 30, many of them expected to be freed, and many of them were. There were a lot of freed men, they were called, and then so slavery wasn't a... You've got to watch it carefully. It wasn't an oppressive, altogether an oppressive, lifelong sentence. So I've got a bit off the track there. But most of the community would have been of the poorer class. Well, they must have been, or he wouldn't write like that. God chose what is foolish in the world to shame the wise. God chose what is weak in the world to shame the strong. God chose what is low and despised in the world, things that are not, to reduce to nothing things that are, so that no one may boast in the presence of God.